This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
A quick disclaimer for our podcast, The SOS Show. Points discussed in this podcast should not be relied upon as conclusive medical advice in any case. The host shall not be a substitute for proper medical professional. You must seek professional help in case of any requirement. Thank you. We just celebrated World Happiness Day, but shouldn't Happiness Day be everyday cause? We are travelers with a certain time on the planet. Hi guys, welcome to 107th episode of the SOS Show with me, Suchita, and we're talking about happiness. So how many of us are really happy? And how do we know that we are happy? If you are in unhappy workplaces, relationships, situations, it's the choice that you've made. And if you can't do anything about it, then why not choose to be happy? Our guest for this episode, Dr. Tracy Brower, is PhD sociologist studying work-life fulfillment and happiness. She's the author of The Secrets to Happiness at Work and Bring Work to Life. She's a contributor to Forbes and Fast Company. Her work has been translated into 18 languages, and you can find her at tracybrower.com. And before we get into the episode, I just want to make a quick announcement that World Bipolar Day is on March 30th, and there's a conference being organized by bipolarindia.com. It's an amazing and important conference, so if you want to attend it, you can register yourself on their website, bipolarindia.com. Hello, Dr. Tracy. Welcome to our podcast, The SOS Show, and thank you for joining in and being part of this conversation, especially when we have just celebrated World Happiness Day. And I saw your post on LinkedIn. So are you happy?
Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm very, very happy to be here. It's good timing.
Awesome. So, you know, I want to have this episode around happiness, since we all constantly talk about happiness. And happiness is such a core part of our existence. And happiness at work and happiness in our personal lives and a daily happiness and strive for happiness. And how do we do it? And I also read your fantastic, I think it was the Forbes article where you mentioned about purpose combining with happiness. And I think that's such a great point. So much to talk about. So let's get started. Just to begin the conversation, Tracy, how do we know that we are happy versus we are not happy?
Oh, I love this question. You know, I think the first thing to know is that we won't always be happy. I think sometimes we have a myth that if we're doing it right, quote unquote, we'll always be happy every minute. But happiness will ebb and flow. And there tend to be a few characteristics if we're feeling happy. One is dedication. We feel committed and dedicated to what we're doing. Another is immersion. We are absolutely into what we're doing and we might lose track of time. Another has to do with energy. We feel energized by what we're doing and we want to put energy into it. And the last thing is we feel like it matters. We feel like there's meaning. And so we can unpack any of those, but I really like those as a way to think about happiness.
Lovely. Do you think we can always feel this kind of energy, this kind of dedication, this kind of immersion daily in our lives?
I think we have the opportunity to empower ourselves for happiness all the time. But I don't believe that every single minute will be a minute feeling those things. You know, sometimes we do things that are hard or stressful or challenging, and that's okay. That's also correlated with happiness when we're stretching. Sometimes we'll have bad days. Sometimes we'll struggle with things. Some aspects of our work may be energizing and exciting. Others may be a little bit blah, and that's okay. We want a greater proportion toward those elements that I talked about. It's kind of a proportional discussion in some ways.
Right. So tell me, Tracy, so when we're correlating happiness with our daily lives, perhaps with our level of performance at work. My definitely counts a lot. When I'm happy, I'm performing and overperforming. Also, your relationships, your everyday relationships with people around you, whether it's friendships, whether it's professional relationships. So does happiness determine that, or the relationships should determine that? You know, how most of the people live the other way around. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I love this point too. I love your language of people live the other way around. We can absolutely start with happiness. Sometimes we wait for happiness. If I'm happy, then I'll perform well. If I'm happy, then I'll have great relationships. But it's actually the other way around. When we're happy, that absolutely affects our performance. When we're happy, that will affect our relationships. And actually, relationships are one of the really, really most significant links with happiness. So when we have great relationships, that tends to drive our levels of happiness, satisfaction, joy, contentment. And as I said, when we're happier, we tend to draw others to us. Yeah. And again, relationships can be up and down as well. You know, we may have an argument with somebody or we may struggle. But overall, when we are intentionally seeking to connect with people, to be empathetic, to listen, to build relationships, to spend time, those are a really, really good idea to drive happiness.
Right. In your article, in the Forbes article, you wrote about purpose with happiness and how purpose contributes to your happiness. And I've been reading a lot about purpose also because trying to, you know, understand my own self better. We all are trying to understand ourselves better. So when we talk about purpose and when we talk about happiness and we talk about the awareness of that purpose, most of the people are not aware. How do you find that purpose that will drive your happiness?
Yeah, there's a really interesting link between purpose and happiness. And that research has been in existence over time, but there's a new study as well that demonstrates when people had more purpose, they tended to feel greater life satisfaction, greater positive emotions, less negative emotions. And I think purpose, it's important to realize, doesn't have to be a giant thing. I think sometimes we think about purpose with big, giant capital letters and we think, oh my gosh, I need to be solving world peace or world hunger. And for people who are contributing to those, right? Thank you. Please keep doing that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, purpose can just be the thing that gets you out of bed in the morning. You know, like I make breakfast for my family, or I contribute to a project at work, or I do volunteer efforts in my community. I think it's really empowering if we think of purpose in a smaller way. Like it's the thing that each of us do well that we just keep doing in order to contribute to our communities and contribute to our organizations and contribute to the others around us. And the thing that matters about purpose for happiness is it tends to expand your viewpoint. We tend to be happier when we're focusing on the bigger picture and how we matter in the bigger picture. We tend to be happier when we're focusing on others and how we're contributing to others. And those are meaningful parts of purpose. So that's why there's that link between purpose and happiness.
Is there a metric system? Is there somewhere, some questions to be answered, somewhere to have a deeper understanding of, okay, I don't have a giant purpose, but maybe I have a small purpose. You know, a lot of people get confused about the word purpose itself. Anything that you would like to sort of advise or guide them that do these things to be able to find your purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. Purpose tends to be about three ingredients. Purpose is typically we feel like there's a bigger thing outside of ourselves that we're contributing to. We all want to build castles, not just lay bricks. And so purpose is that bigger thing, number one. Number two, we usually feel a sense of purpose when we feel like we can make a unique contribution to that thing. And thirdly, we tend to feel a greater sense of purpose when it's linked with people. So, you know, like we will sign up to, you know, help the organization grow at 15% annually, right? Or to, you know, penetrate new markets, whatever those right things are that we're signing up for as part of our organization. But a bigger thing that will motivate us is knowing how we're serving clients, how we're serving customers, how our work matters to others. So I think the things we can do about that are to remind ourselves of that bigger thing that matters, to remind ourselves about how our work matters. And that may just be thinking about how our work contributes to a colleague and how their work and the next work and the next work contributes to the bigger picture. So remind ourselves how we contribute, and then remind ourselves how people are impacted by what we're doing. So I don't know, maybe we're making a widget that goes into a walker that's used by the elderly and helps them with their mobility. We remind ourselves about how that really matters and how our small part of that is a part of affecting other people. So we can just be really mindful of how our work is mattering and how it ladders out to that bigger picture.
We need to be mindful about how our work matters and how we are bringing change in the world and our own importance of existence. Tracy, there has been, we saw in the last couple of, I would not say couple of years, maybe in the last year, we saw this great resignation that happened where there was this mass exodus from work and people were talking about toxic culture. People were talking about, lack of sleep. And also we are living in the times when the human priority has shifted to their own happiness and mental health versus going out there and working. And that's a huge, huge shift in the attitude of people. So in this world of cutthroat competition, in these ecosystems that are still germing these cutthroat competitions and the toxic culture, and people are trying to jump the line and doing all sort of things to jump the line. At least I see in my ecosystem of filmmaking and also in the startup culture. What are your thoughts that what is it that, you know, gets people to get in these cutthroat zones and toxic zones to move ahead in life? And what is that the ecosystem should do to actually get them rid, because the ecosystem will then lose a lot of good people that's there.
Yeah, I always like to say that the talent revolution, that great resignation, is the best evidence that what we were doing before in terms of work experiences wasn't working really, really well. And people started to say, oh my goodness, the grass is greener. Whatever I'm doing today, there's something better. Globally, we saw statistics that 40 to 60% of people were taking new jobs. But then we also saw globally that people were having buyer's remorse, quote unquote. They were disappointed they'd taken the new job. The new job wasn't what they were hoping for. Their hopes were dashed because it wasn't all that they wanted. And I think what we can really, really take away from this is both the individual and the organizational responsibility. As individuals, we can absolutely see that our work is part of a full life. The ideal is not to do as little as we can, quietly quit, just, you know, sort of sit on the couch as much as possible. Work is an important part of life, an important part of how we express our skills and talents and capabilities. So as individuals, we can think about work as an important part of life, no matter what we do, even if we have ups and downs. Organizations, I think, have so much to learn from this experience in terms of prioritizing well-being, prioritizing the human experience, giving people more flexibility when they can, supporting people with programs and policies that support mental health, supporting people by developing leaders so that leaders can be more empathetic. But when organizations really do the right thing for people, we know statistically that business results absolutely follow. Like, we don't have to choose between doing the right thing for people and doing the right thing for the business. When we do the right thing for people by creating great work experiences, then business results absolutely come as well.
Yeah, so trying to create great human experiences in the organization is key. And also, everyone is now talking about how managers are responsible for people's mental health, and they're the one that who determine that how people are going to be feeling. What are your thoughts there?
Oh my gosh, there is some brand new research. I did an article about this. I know you saw it as well, because we exchanged messages about it. But the new research globally is that 70% of people said that their manager affected their mental health more than their doctor or their therapist, and on par with their partner. So as if leaders didn't already have enough pressure, right? I mean, it's a big deal. And so on the one hand, I think leaders can look at it and think, oh my gosh, like, let me add this to the plate of things I feel responsible for. But I think we can look at it positively as well. Oh my gosh, as a leader, I have such an opportunity to make a difference for people. And this thing that I think is so important for us to point out is that a leader is not responsible for someone else's happiness, mental health. There's a lot that's outside of a leader's control, and we need to be responsible for our mental health and, you know, ensuring we have the right support systems and everything. However, leaders are responsible to others to create the conditions for mental health, create the conditions for happiness. Yeah. And there are key ways that leaders can do that. So I feel like we don't want to put the full burden on leaders, like they're totally responsible for all these things, but they are responsible to create those conditions.
They are responsible to create those conditions, because of course it's always top down, as we always talk about, you know, who's making the rules and who's bringing about a change in the culture. So when it again comes to work, Tracy, tell me a couple of things that organizations and ecosystems can actually do to create more happiness in their environment versus, you know, it's important to bring results, but at what cost, you know? So a couple of things that perhaps they can pay more attention to get rid of maybe, you know, people, I would not say, but, you know, something that creates toxicity in the culture.
Yeah, this is a big deal. I always like to say that a culture is significantly determined by the worst behavior it will tolerate. So, you know, like, you know, sometimes there's an organization and there's somebody who's just really, 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 I don't know, a superstar salesperson, but they're kind of a jerk, but we keep them around because they drive so many sales. Or somebody's really, really getting results and, you know, they're really difficult to work with, but the organization doesn't hold that person accountable. Yeah. And so one of the first things organizations can do to ensure they're not creating toxic culture is by holding people accountable, for good and for bad, right? Like, when people do great work, they want to be held accountable. People want feedback. They want to know that their contribution matters enough to have someone waiting for their deliverable. So accountability is a really good idea. Recognition is a really good idea. Another one we haven't talked about, of course, you know, giving people that sense of purpose and reminding them the great work the organization does and how they matter. Of course, linking people and giving them projects across team boundaries, or creating affinity groups, or, you know, interest groups that link people. That's the connection piece we talked about. But another one we haven't talked about yet is just giving people stretch and growth opportunities. When people have the opportunity to do new things, to try new things, to stretch their capabilities, to solve tough problems, that's very correlated with happiness and mental health and great cultures. So that's another thing that leaders and organizations can do, is find out, you know, what really is motivating for employees, and to provide those opportunities for learning and growth.
That's a great point. Motivating, and see how their capabilities can be stretched in terms of, you know, problem solving and how they are taking on their challenges. That's really great. That can perhaps shift the perspective from viewing things as toxic to viewing things perhaps as challenging. And using that to enhance their own selves, perhaps their happiness, Tracy, tell me, I know of people who are perpetually unhappy. They just need, a little thing to become unhappy. And their happiness is actually tied to external things like money or buying new shoes or buying new clothes. And they constantly give themselves so that they can be happy, you know. What do you say to that? Gifting yourself to be happy.
Oh, this is so interesting. Actually, yeah. There is a gene for happiness. There yeah. are literally people who tend to just be happier over time. However, happiness is also very, very driven by our choices that we make about how we think about things. And you said it, you know, how do we think about something as a challenge versus a difficulty, right? So our mindset is a really big part of it. And you also are pointing to, there's some wonderful research on if we spend money on things and on items, it will actually contribute to our happiness less than if we spend money on experiences. Experiences tend to be much more correlated with happiness. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, we tend to experiences. We go on vacation, we go on a tour, we do a fun thing. We tend to do that with other people. And so that tends to correlate with happiness. The other thing is that experiences which are novel for us tend to embed in our memories to a greater extent. And so, you know, you bought the new pair of shoes and those were great until they, you know, you walk through the mud puddle on the first week or whatever. But the experience that you had is embedded in your memory and you can go back to it again and again. So experience tends to be longer lasting. And that's a really big reason that it contributes more to happiness than items.
Wow, that's lovely. Gifts versus your experiences. So go for experiences to keep yourself happier than go for your new shoes or new pair of clothes, you know, rather than go on a vacation experience, perhaps a new place, a new food, a new culture. Oh, that's lovely. That's a lovely, lovely, lovely point. Tracy, tell me, how do we create an environment? It's inside and outside, within and without, so that we do not have to strive for happiness, because happiness is already there. It's just that we are constantly in another zone, trying to be living, trying to go through life. Some people, rather most people, find it monotonous, their everyday living. So they become unhappy. So how do we create that environment around our own selves? What should we do every day?
Yeah, you absolutely are making such another great point. There's a myth that if we pursue happiness, we'll get it. And that's actually not the case. The more we pursue happiness for its own sake, according to research, the less likely we are to accomplish it. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that if we're pursuing something, we're reminding ourselves what we don't already have. Otherwise, why would we be pursuing it? And we're tending to focus on ourselves, right? Like me, me, me. How do I get happy? How do I accomplish happiness? And that's negatively correlated with happiness. More positively correlated with happiness is focusing on others and how we're making a contribution. So instead of focusing on how do I get happy, it's better to focus on creating the conditions for happiness. We've talked about some of those: purpose, connection, investing in experiences, learning and growth. We can all create those for ourselves. Another thing that helps us to create happiness in our lives is gratitude. Gratitude is very significantly correlated with happiness. Like when we remind ourselves intentionally about, oh, you know, what am I grateful for today? When we wake up in the morning or when we go to bed at night, and less about things probably and more about people and capabilities. So gratitude is a really big one. And intentionality is another good one. Another thing that we haven't talked about that helps us to create happiness in our lives is performance. When we perform really well, we can find more happiness. And sometimes that looks like things outside of work. Like we're all familiar with the idea that when we're happy at work, we tend to be happier at home. But the opposite is also true. When we're happier outside of work, we tend to perceive more happiness inside of work. So, oh my gosh, if we go volunteer in the community garden and we feel like we're so good with such a green thumb, that will contribute to happiness. Or we contribute at the soup kitchen and we are like brilliant, we're brilliant in the kitchen and we can whip up the best recipes. That connection with performance is a really, really big one in terms of creating happiness as well.
And as you mentioned about gratitude, gratitude is something that increases your happiness. How does gratitude do that? Just for our listeners, what is it that gratitude brings that gets us to the zone of happiness? What is that?
Right. Yeah, what that is it's actually a neurological response in the reward centers of our brain. Yeah. And when we are really intentional about gratitude, we almost train our brains to go to that reward place again and again. When we remind ourselves what's working well, when we remind ourselves what we already have, when we remind ourselves that even though things aren't perfect, you know, these elements are positive, that tends to increase blood flow to those reward centers of our brain. And there's actually been some wonderful research on this. I've written a couple of articles on it, which include links to the peer-reviewed academic research on this topic. And so gratitude neurologically is doing those kinds of things. But the other thing gratitude is doing is it's focusing us. It tends to help us be more present oriented. It tends to help us be more intentional. And that is really healthy in this moment of hustle culture and the deluge of information that's always coming at us. The bad news that seems like we're always marinating in, gratitude tends to shift our focus and help us be more present oriented.
Lovely. Tracy, tell me, what do you think of hustle culture? I always ask this to people. What are your thoughts on everyone constantly trying to get there? I mean, is that the purpose? We are here constantly hustling. Is that the way to live? Is that the way and the only way to grow? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is so important because we need to find the right balance between like pushing and stretching and wanting to achieve more. Those are positive things. We humans, we want to do more. We want to make a difference. And if we are just running and running and running and running from one thing to another, we are just not going to be achieving happiness or joy or fulfillment. And so there's this beautiful concept of eustress. Eustress is the right amount of stress and challenge. And actually, if we have very, very little stress, all we do is kind of lay around and sit on the couch and eat bonbons. We will actually experience, it sounds nice for a while, right? But overall, we'll actually be more likely to experience things like depression or anxiety or mental health issues. And if we have too much stress, we're constantly running, we never feel like we can measure up, we never feel like we can keep up, we have way too many demands in relationship to our capacity, then we will also feel mental health challenges, depression, anxiety. So there's this just right amount of stress that we want. So we're trying new things. We're putting ourselves out there. We're stretching our capabilities. We have enough on our calendar that we feel like our time is being devoted in the right places to friends and family and community and work. That is what we want to strive for. So I think what's interesting is it's this pendulum, right? Like, if the pendulum is too far toward hustle, that's not good. But we don't want the pendulum to swing so far toward, oh, I'm just going to sit around every day. That's also not the ideal. Mm. As much as we love our, you know, vacation in a beautiful resort, we do on kind of a day-to-day basis need this positive tension with just enough challenge.
Just enough challenge. So just balancing your hustling with perhaps your non-hustling times, you know, just stay calm, but also hustle. So balance it out so that your happiness is balanced. Is that the reason the hustling culture is the reason that so many people are unhappy on the planet?
Yes, there does seem to absolutely be a correlation to this hustle culture and lack of happiness. And, you know, I heard a great saying. It was something like, the more time-saving devices we have, the less time we have, right? So we should have more time on our hands. But what happens is all of our technology helps us go faster, and then we're trying to pack more in. The other thing that has contributed to our lower levels of happiness over time is media and social media. Yeah. You know, like with media, we're constantly exposed to bad news, right? So we want to manage our media diet. Social media puts us in this hypervigilant state. We're watching other people. We're managing our own, you know, brand or how we're perceived. We're worried about how we look all the time. There's a wonderful saying, comparison is the thief of joy. And so if you look at some of the younger generations who are struggling mightily with well-being and mental health issues, the thing that absolutely matters is that being raised on social media has been really negative for mental health. And it's negative for all ages and life stages, but especially for many of the younger generations who have never been without it. And so that too, if we manage our media diet and our social media diet, that can be a really positive thing for happiness and mental health.
Managing your media diet, your social media diet could be could be enriching for your living experience in life. Tell me, Tracy, I constantly hear this, that be a thermostat and not a thermometer to keep yourself balanced, as in constantly do not react to situations, respond to situations, be a thermostat so you can constantly manage your emotional level, balance it, rather than a thermometer where you shoot up your emotions and then shoot down your emotions. And I think that also determines your happiness a lot. You know, if you're able to take that amount of whatever is coming in front of you. A couple of things, Tracy, where we can manage our daily happiness levels by managing our own selves. A couple of things that the listeners can do.
Yeah, I think this is really important. I think we have, in the popular press, we've heard all these messages that if we feel something, it must be true. Or if we are upset about something, there must be a reason for that. And I think what we can do is really try to pause and try to talk ourselves off the ledge, if you will, right? Like, just because I'm angry doesn't necessarily mean that things outside of me deserve my anger, or that someone has intentionally, you know, been rude to me, for example. So I think we can pause and push back on our own thinking and sort of talk to ourselves about whether that emotion really fits the situation. So pausing is one. I think another thing we can do is assume good intentions. You know, it's a rare person who wakes up in the morning and wants to be offensive or is trying to, you know, be difficult. And so when we assume good intentions in people and teams and what's around us in the context, I think that also helps, because it gives us that moment to pause and say, oh, how might somebody else look at this differently? And a third thing I think we can really, really do is ask questions. I think it's easy to jump to conclusions about what's going on around us. And when we just stop and ask questions, and curiosity, I think, is such a wonderful starting point for empathy. You know, like we're curious about somebody else. We want to understand how their experience is different than our own. We value and respect differences among all of us. And we value and respect that we're all learning and we're all kind of trying to figure this out together. Yeah. I think asking questions is another really pragmatic way that we can be curious, that we can be empathetic, that we can contribute to our own happiness as well.
Wow, that's fantastic, fantastic. Thank you so much, Tracy. I so appreciate your time. And I'm going to be putting the names of your two books in the introduction, and while I do the intro separately. And it was such great points, Tracy. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And for me, the biggest takeaway is that when you tie your life with a purpose, your happiness quotient goes up. So find your purpose, find ways to find your purpose. Do follow us on our Instagram handle, the SOS Show Pod, for regular updates on the podcast. Till then, take good care of yourself and have a great weekend.